Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Action Fanatics. It is your host, Chris the Brain. It is the Bulletproof Podcast, and it is a continuation of our Roadhouse discussion, because last week, right here on the Bulletproof Podcast, I was joined by this gentleman, my good friend Ryan Campbell.
Yes, I'm glad to be back. First time I've ever done two episodes straight, I think. So this is new territory. That's right.
And we talked about the original Roadhouse, Roadhouse 1989, starring Patrick Swayze and Sam Elliott. And it was a first-time watch for you. And absolutely. Just to recap your feelings on that movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Specifically, Sam Elliott's character, I think, was probably one of my favorite parts of the movie. But yeah, I really liked it. I totally get why it's kind of such a, you know, dude movie. But yeah, I thought it had some really good points, some good story. I liked the characters in it. I enjoyed it. I was excited to see kind of what they would kind of keep over in the remake and kind of what would be new. So that's part of what we'll discuss today.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's now this week we will be talking about the new Roadhouse that just dropped last week on Prime Video. But before we get into that, and obviously that was a first time watch for both of us and for everyone who partook in it, I'm going to talk about someone we lost last week. Great character actor, M. Emmett Walsh. Probably most known mainstream wise for Blade Runner and Blood Simple, but for me, the role I will always associate with him most, and we talked about this movie last week, Back to School. Diving coach himself, Coach Turnbull. Probably my favorite M. Emmett Walsh. Well, maybe not my favorite, but definitely one of my more memorable ones. And then, of course, action-wise, he was in Missing in Action, playing Braddock's good friend Tucker, which I could relate to that. I have a good friend named Tucker. And then in Red Scorpion as well, with Dolph Lundgren. So, quite a loss. Just like 2 days before his 89th birthday, I believe. So, he had a good life. A lot of memorable roles, but definitely wanted to take that time to remember the great M. Emmett Walsh.
Such a crazy range of films and everything. He's done voiceover for cartoons. He's done sitcoms. He's done action movies. He's done comedies. He's all across the board, like literally just a journeyman play, you know, can fill in any role, can do all kinds of things. So definitely one of those kind of like unsung heroes that had such a long career and was in a lot of your favorite movies. Speaking to the, you know, listeners, like your favorite movies. Definitely a huge loss for the industry.
Yeah. It's like whatever you were into, whatever genre you were into, movies, TV, cartoons, whatever. You experienced M. Emmett Walsh sometime in your life. And he will definitely be missed. All right. Let's get into business. Roadhouse 2024 had one hell of a trailer. I was definitely hyped. I came into this movie very excited. Did I leave the movie very excited? We'll find out. Let's first talk about some of the similarities between 1989 and 2024. I think the first one that popped out to me was we had Frank recruiting Dalton in the first movie, and it's Frankie in this new movie, played by Jessica Williams.
Yep, they did that a few times with different names, and of course the main character's name is Dalton, but it's his last name, and there's a few other kind of little nods like that. But yeah, that was a fun little, you know, Easter egg, I guess you could say, for the fans of the OG.
And of course, a little difference here was Frank in the 1989 one was specifically going for Dalton, where this Frankie had come to recruit. She came to recruit Post Malone.
Carter. Yeah. Post Malone's character.
Carter. Yeah. So that was a little bit of a twist where she's like, well, you know what? He didn't even want to fight you. So I think you're the better choice here. And she probably was right.
Which we often come to in movies that we talk about here is telling the story without telling the story. And the idea of like hyping up Post Malone, we see him knock out like two guys. He's got this big wad of cash. And then the fact that he gives it all up at the very sight of Dalton sitting there in a hoodie instantly, you know, again, going back to the original Roadhouse, the way that it's able to establish that this guy is a badass without us seeing anything for a while, I think was really well done.
And of course, in this, in that part, it was like, we talked about it last week. Like it just had to be like word of mouth that this Dalton guy was a badass. But in this situation, this Dalton was an MMA guy, UFC fighter who we will later find out killed an opponent in the ring. So that's a little bit easier to get around and, you know, that clip going all over the internet and just being all over the news cycle. I'm sure when it happened, that made a little bit, you know, you didn't have to suspend your disbelief as much. Like, okay, yeah, people would know that you don't want to mess with this guy. Another, the Laura, when he gets to the Roadhouse, which is
just called Roadhouse.
The Roadhouse. Laura the bartender is basically the Carrie character from the 1989 movie.
Correct. She's even the one to interrupt him with breakfast. He's not bare ass naked, but he's pretty darn close.
He
did that scene as well with her in that role.
A bit more modest than Mr. Swayze. But there's plenty of man ass to come in this movie. So don't worry, man ass fans. Right. The bookstore was basically this version of Red's Auto Supply.
Correct. Yeah. And we did introduce, as opposed to just having Red, a younger character, Charlie, who's like the daughter of the owner of the bookstore, which I think grounds Dalton a little bit more. Obviously, like, you know, you can see how he would empathize with Red, but the fact that like Charlie keeps picturing him as like the Western hero, and you can tell that she kind of, you know, gives the entire idea of this small town, this kind of family, small community that's being, you know, pushed down to the thumb on him of this rich guy. She kind of helps put a face to that really early on in the film. And I think helps kind of establish that why Dalton's needed in this place.
And yeah, and definitely helps Dalton throughout, just like Red helped Dalton with his car issues. She's obviously helping him in other ways with information and whatnot. The other key thing here, the love interest, Ellie, a doctor in the emergency room, an ER doctor. So very much the same. And also much like Doc in the original, she is related to someone else in the movie. We will find out later. I would say the unique living quarters that Dalton has. In 89, he's got the barn, the loft in the barn, and here he's got a houseboat.
A nice, easy transition when you're moving from a, you know, Midwestern town to a tropical location, and you turn a barn into a houseboat. Perfect.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, that's definitely one of the differences, the location. We had bands.
I got a good chuckle out of me when, so it's the one change that is Frankie owns the houseboat as opposed to just meeting somebody else in town. But when they make a joke about the Roadhouse just being called Roadhouse, she says, her uncle also named the boat. And then it cuts to a shot of just the back of the boat where you put the name, and the boat is called The Boat. So I thought that was a pretty funny gag playing off of the, you know, lack of creativity with the name Roadhouse.
Yes. And you had the bands that were playing at the Roadhouse behind the chicken wire. You got to have that.
A whole bunch of different bands. You did see a wide variety. And the movie did love to showcase that. There are a lot of like needle drop cuts to just a band playing. Whereas in the original, it's the same band throughout the entire movie.
Right, but I was going
to
say.
I liked the variation. And some of them are, you know, cover songs of stuff you know. It was a nice way to kind of seamlessly put those kinds of transitions into the soundtrack of the movie and to make it make sense in the context of the Roadhouse as opposed to just throwing songs you know, in between different transitions.
I was going to say Frankie worked a lot harder at the bookings than Frank. Frank just picked one band and like just play for as long as you want.
She also probably in Key West or Florida Keys, maybe she had a wider net of talent to choose from as opposed to rural Kansas City. But
yeah. Right. Yeah. People would probably want to go to Florida.
Right. You know, there's probably plenty of retired musicians in the area that are willing to just come play.
So yeah, that was, and the other one is, and here's a spoiler. Dalton isn't the one to kill the main bad guy.
He does do his fair share of killing, though.
He does, yeah. He does.
One his particular fair share one is pretty, pretty heartless and gruesome. Like when you consider, it's kind of similar to the Dalton kill that happens in the original involving throats. But Jake Gyllenhaal's Dalton is very less conflicted about the killing than Patrick Swayze's character.
Yeah, so but he does not kill the main bad guy, much like he did. Dalton did not kill the main bad guy in the OG.
I guess it depends on who we're saying the main bad guy is, because that's almost debatable.
I think that's where I have a bit of a problem or a real problem with the movie. But we'll get into that. Some of the main differences between the two. First things first, there was no monster truck.
There was not a monster truck. There was boat sales. I will give them that. But yeah, I wonder if Dutch's boat sales moved to Key West. That would have been a nice little Easter egg throw in there. I would have appreciated. But
no monster truck,
sadly.
But a killer crocodile.
Yeah, and did you know before this movie that crocodiles hide their food?
I did not.
I did not either, but I learned. So I
learned. I did not expect there to be a killer crocodile in a Roadhouse movie. So that was a surprise. One thing that a lot of people mentioned on social media, and they were very sad and upset about, is this movie did not include the line, "I used to fuck guys like you in prison."
It did not. There was one omission from this film that I felt it really missed. But that is one as well that was severely missing, and not near enough denim. There was a severe lack of denim in this one.
Well, you're in a more tropical,
I suppose,
climate. You know, you want to wear a little bit more lighter clothing.
Yeah, lots of loose fitting tropical shirts as opposed to just denim on denim.
Heavy denim, yeah. And then obviously the big one, and this may be what you were, we don't really have a Sam Elliott character at all.
No, exactly. And it seemed like it was really missing. And this goes back to one of my big, I don't say one of my big, but maybe my biggest thing I thought the movie missed narratively that we'll touch on, I guess, when we get to that part. But that character, the Sam Elliott type character, kind of feeds directly into that. And I think the movie was really missing that. So it could have been, I mean, and there's so many obvious ways that it could have been, like maybe it's his ex trainer in his MMA days, you know, or it's an uncle or something that kind of got him into fighting. Like who knows? There's multiple different ways that you could have inserted a old, you know, wise wizard type character into it to kind of help guide our hero on his journey, that it just didn't really have. I don't know if I would have watched this without seeing the original, if I would have noticed that it was missing it as much, but you know, going in directly watching the original and Sam Elliott being one of my favorite things about the original movie, I felt it was really kind of missing in that department.
And, you know, we talked about it last week, you know, Roadhouse was a bit long of, you know, especially for an action movie. But when Sam Elliott came in, it was like that breath of fresh air. It was like, it injected
new life into it and just kind of,
And it was like, okay, this has to keep going on now because this is, you know, if he wasn't in there,
character, yeah.
If he wasn't in there, it would have just been like, okay, this is just dragging, but it just kind of, all right, now this is interesting. This is a new character we're bringing in here. You can definitely feel it. And here's my, you know, the character they do kind of introduce halfway through is Knox, played by Conor McGregor, who honestly...
I don't know if that was Conor McGregor or if it was just like three bags of steroids dressed up in a Conor McGregor costume walking around for a few hours.
Often with his ass hanging out.
That's right. And probably doing lines of coke in between shots as well. They literally told Conor McGregor to just crank it to 11, and that's exactly what they got.
And he did. He yeah. To me, I mean, this would have been very different. He wouldn't have been the wise, obviously, wizard type. But to me, he should have been the kind of Dalton's friend. Because he was so over the top as a villain that it was almost to ridiculous levels, to the point of he could have been like Dalton's MMA buddy. Like after the incident in MMA, he was the one guy who still was his friend, still talked to him. And yeah, he's a little crazy. He's a little unhinged. But he could have come in and helped Dalton. But honestly, the problem here was Dalton really didn't need any help.
No, that's a great point, though. Not even one I consider. I think if you take, because they even give Connor some pretty funny lines, like
like they want to make him likable,
right? Or they at least make you think he's a badass and stuff. And I think if you just take his acting in this and just kind of pivot it a little bit, yeah, I think that he would have been perfect in that role.
Like if Dalton was like, okay, these guys are serious and I'm outnumbered, but there's one guy I trust on this planet Earth. And yeah, he's out there, but I need a guy who's out there for what's going on here in this crazy.
Would have been a pretty good spiritual successor to Sam Elliott's character, because even though that character is like old and wise, he also like doesn't entirely have a moral code. Because as soon as things get bad, he literally tries to talk Dalton into just leaving. You know, he's right. I talked about this last week. He's not saying it, you know, to get Dalton to do the right thing. You believe that he's legit. Like, dude, like, we can be out of here by tomorrow, and it's all behind us. So. That character didn't need to be like morally perfect. And I think, like you said, that would have been a nice kind of pivot on that role, and it would have made Connor, I think, a more likable character. And then maybe you could have the bad guy be a little bit more of a, you know, nightclub owner who's got his money in pockets of everybody, as opposed to like his dumb son that doesn't know how to run things. But you know,
it's just
directions.
Yeah. It almost feels like, if somehow there's a Roadhouse 2 off of this, that Connor's going to be the good guy in that one, or he'll be on the good side. I don't know how they'll do it, but it just feels like that.
Yeah, it's wrestling. You can always, you know, if you set out to do that, you can, somebody who's that charismatic, you can usually turn them and make people like
exactly.
Him.
So,
that's like Jason Statham in the Fast franchise. They did something similar there.
You right. Know,
he killed one of the like foundational members in a movie later. And just, you know, wash it all away and make him a lovable good guy that saves the main character's baby.
There you go. So it's been done. Let's talk about it, because this is, you know, I came into the movie. I was enjoying myself. Got off to a good start. And then just some point, they lost me. And I really think it's the bad guys' fault. The bad guys, they were never a threat to Dalton. Like you said, it's not even like the main bad guy is really in prison, kind of pulling the strings. We never even see him. It's his stupid son.
And I can tell you, there was one moment I specifically remember that happens really early in the film that I think if they would have just done one simple little change, would have established him as a more of a threat. So early on in the film, when we first meet him, this is Ben, the main villain of the film, I guess you could say. Again, arguable if we want to say, but Ben Brandt, the son of the guy who's in prison that's trying to buy the land to build a condo or whatever, that kind of thing. You've seen that story before. But they're on his sailboat, his rich, lavish sailboat, and he's sitting there getting a straight blade shave from one of his employees, just unnamed employee. And you know, if you've ever done like a straight blade shave, you know, there's no guard or anything. You could literally slit someone's throat with it. So they've already established, I feel like, that this dude's a little bit unhinged, because he's like moving his head left and right. He's ranting and yelling. He's screaming at his subordinates, and the boat's rocking back and forth. And so at the point you're thinking, this dude is unhinged. This dude's crazy. He's rich and spoiled. It almost could remind you of the scene in the original when the guy's weaving his car back and forth. Like, this guy is so rich. Everything is so beyond him. Literally doesn't know how the world works. Like, and then of course he gets nicked, and he gets nicked again. And then he stands up, and I thought this is where the movie was going to go. Cause the guy who nicked him is standing with his back to the railing. And I'm like, he's going to kick him over the railing into the open sea and kill this unnamed servant person.
Right.
And he doesn't. He doesn't do anything to him. He's just like, you're an idiot. And then he like goes upstairs and just smacks the captain of the boat. And it's all they needed. If he all he's gonna do is stick his foot out, kick that dude over the railing, and then all of his subordinates look at each other, whatever, no one says a word, and bam, we've established that this dude's a psycho. This dude thinks the world revolves around him. He thinks he's untouchable, and he will kill anyone that gets in his way. And I think that would have helped establish everything going forward as him being a threat. But he doesn't, and then it's just scene after scene of him just kind of not willing to go that next step, and he's just not really a legitimate threat, even at the end when, you know, when he is kind of trying to kill Dalton, you're not buying that, you know, he's actually going to succeed. He's just kind of weakling.
And then let's also talk about like the plan itself. What he wants. He wants to build a resort. He owns like everything but the roadhouse. What was stopping him from just because you didn't have that little parcel of land, like the whole thing was couldn't be done.
I've been to beach towns where there are resorts, and then, like, in the middle of it is like some old shack, bar or grill.
And that person ain't giving it up.
and that's where people at the resort go to hang out. Like, they could have easily built around it, or, you know, or just built like a tower on one side of it and a tower on the other side of it. And
it was not like he was trying to build a railroad and they like absolutely had to go through that little stretch of land, and without it, there was no way the railroad would connect.
It sounds like the roadhouse was smack dab in the middle. They show a map.
It was on the coast. Yeah.
It's like the bottom 10% of all the land he owns. He could put Disney World on the rest of the other land he has.
Yeah. It made so just there. It's like, okay, this, you know, that's always the thing that you want a villain where it's like, you can understand why they want to do what they want to do. I don't understand why you want to do what you want to do. You don't scare me. And I'm me. I'm just stupid me. I'm not freaking MMA fighter.
Which I think even the movie could have, even if they would have tackled that head on, because again, he's a spoiled rich, never been told no. So you could have made that even a scene where, because there's scenes where he talks to Frankie and it's established that they know each other, and he's probably tried to borrow it from her before. All she had to say was, you have literally X amount of acres. Why do you need this? And establish that this dude, it's more about the principle now that this guy has never been told no in his life, but they even leave that out there and don't kind of, you know, have that interaction. They could have easily inserted those two lines of dialogue in the one of the three or four times that him and Frankie are having an exchange, and they missed that opportunity.
Yes. Once again, I agree with you there. Some of the good things. I mean, I liked Dalton. I liked Jake Gyllenhaal's portrayal of him. Obviously, a much different character. But these bad guys are so awful. If you really didn't know, it's like Dalton's the bully. He's beating up these idiots who have no clue what they're doing.
Yeah, and I feel like, again, I did like Mo. That was like my favorite, one of my favorite, maybe my favorite character in the movie.
Mo is almost like the Tinker.
Yeah, he's pretty much the Tinker equivalent, where he has some of the funnier lines in the movie. His reaction when Dalton is putting the dead body in the back of the truck, he's like, "Oh, hey man, how's it going? You know, I was just like," it's hilarious. And I feel like that character would have been even funnier if he was surrounded by actual threats, but most of the henchmen are just as bumbling idiots to where they all kind of look like that in the end.
Yeah, they're like almost nameless, like just generic bad guys.
The Knox character needed to be there from the beginning as just like the muscle on their team, but them bringing him in as this like wild card that even the bad guys don't want to deal with, it just made them look even more incompetent, which I think the movie was trying to make them look incompetent. That was part of it, but there also needs to be some sort of legitimate threat to them. You know, you can have an incompetent villain and still have them be a threat.
Right. And it's like the incompetent ones who burned down the bookstore. Like it wasn't even Knox who did that. Like Knox to me would have been in that Marshall Teague role, the Jimmy role, where it was directly him doing all that crap. Yeah. He was the one who rode away from Reds, and you know, he's, you know, it was him. He was the muscle.
Right. You could have, and some of, in the original, some of those henchmen were kind of bubbling idiots, but as long as you had one or two at the top that were a threat, then it makes everything work. But yeah. And again, I think if you just would have had somebody that was there from the beginning as that character, because like you said, someone of Dalton's skill level isn't really even needed to solve this problem. Somebody who was just, you know, a tough bar guy that probably lived in that town could have probably handled these idiots. Didn't need an ex-MMA fighter.
No, he was overqualified. Maybe it should have been old Post Malone showing up here. She was probably on the right path to begin with, and he would have been more than capable. What are some of the things that you did like about the movie?
I like the action scenes. I thought the fight scenes are really good. There were a few moments that just kind of made me go, oh, you know, some of the CGI was a little weird. And there were a few shots where like the cinematography would get kind of wonky and they try to do like a fisheye lens, like moving thing. But, you know, I give whenever movies like this try something like that, I at least give them points for trying to differentiate and being stylistic. It wasn't like one of those movies where there's a cut every half second and you can't even track what's going on with the action. So I thought the fight scenes, the choreography was cool, specifically the final battle between Dalton and Knox when he does like the breaks off the stabs and hits him like three times with like the broken pieces of wood. I thought that was really cool. Their whole fight I thought was good. The way they're like switching from brawling to then they go to the ground and they're switching like grapple holds and choke holds. The way Knox gets out of like the sleeper hold that Dalton has him in. I liked all those little elements. If you're watching their hands and their movement, they're trying to like get leverage and get things going. So I thought, oh, that was really cool. And so, yeah, it's minus just some wonky CGI, which usually is what you get when it's like a, you know, that's not the point of the movie. They weren't focused on it being like this giant CGI heavy film. So they probably skipped a little bit on the budget there, which, you know, I'll let it go. But yeah, I thought for the most part, the action was really well done. And I thought like the choreography was good.
Yeah. And I mean, in that scene in particular, obviously, you know, you've got Conor McGregor, an actual MMA fighter, you should be doing MMA shit. And he was.
I hope. And you like to think he probably contributed to kind of some of the planning on that, you would hope. But I don't know. I don't know who choreographed that. But his input, I would hope that they would have leaned into having him on set.
And, you know, and it was obviously cool that, you know, Dalton is a former UFC guy, and they were actually able to film that stuff at an actual UFC event.
Yeah, I remember when that happened and seeing on Twitter people posting videos of like, hey, Jake Gyllenhaal is here filming stuff for his, you know, for the new Roadhouse. Because I remember when all that was on Twitter, or I guess it was still Twitter at the time before it turned into X. But, you know, and knowing that that was going to be a part of it, and kind of, you could kind of start piecing together where they were going to go with the film. But that definitely helps lend some you know, credibility to the film when it can get shots. Yeah,
it roots it in reality, you know, because that's one of the things, like, you know, and is. The Rocky movies were freaking fantastic. They're classics, but that was the one thing, like Rocky Balboa had the advantage, and even the Creed movie, like Rocky Balboa was like in an actual arena, and it was like an actual boxing event that was being, you know, a pay-per-view. So,
oh yeah. You tell all those people in that attendance, hey, you're all going to be in a movie. Just, you know, go crazy for these few shots. And people are like, hell yeah.
I mean, yeah, that looks so much better than when, you know, all the tricks they have to do with like moving the crowd around and having fake people or just darkening the seats and everything. And, you know, because obviously it's, you know, those things take a long time to shoot. So to be able to get this done at an actual event was pretty awesome.
I was a fun fact. I was at Talladega when they were filming Talladega Nights, and we had pit passes, and there's a scene where they're like behind the driver introductions and they're like, they get into a little fist fight. We were there when they were filming that scene. So like all those people standing around are just normal people with pit passes that were watching this. And then during a few like cautions and pace laps, they would drive their cars out and just like get a few shots of them moving, you know, with normal cars, get a few shots. So they filmed that like during an actual race. And I think, again, it just helps give it more credibility when you're not, you know, CGIing things into a blank background and you get real actual people and stuff like that. So I'm a movie star. I'm not on IMDb for it though.
Oh, you need to get yourself on there.
Just extra in Talladega Nights.
You should. Can you screenshot yourself? Can you see yourself?
When the movie came out, like I remember on DVD, we went like step by step through that shot to see if you could see us. And I think you can see like my dad's hat or something, but like,
oh, so your dad's hat should be on IMDb.
My dad's hat should have an IMDb profile page or something.
Very nice. Very nice. You know, I liked the kind of where we finally, because we don't obviously get to see Dalton in action at the beginning. He shows up, takes off his hoodie, and Carter, aka Post Malone's like, nope, not fighting him. So when we first get to see Dalton fight, it's in the parking lot of the Roadhouse with the biker guys. And, you know, that's, you know, where that's kind of his coming out party there, where it's like, okay, this guy is not, you should be afraid of him. If you weren't smart like these guys weren't, and you actually decide to challenge him, even if you have the numbers advantage, he's still going to kick all your asses.
I really love that scene too. I think I even text you when you know, as we shoot each other observations back and forth as we're watching stuff. Usually not even with a, hey, I'm watching this. You just get a random text. But yeah. when they have the slap fight and he, you know, asks them if they have insurance and all these other things, they're like, ha ha. But like when he drives them all to the hospital afterwards and they just do that hard cut to them, like in the car, and the dude's got like ice on his arm, I was dying laughing. I thought that was really clever and a nice bit to kind of, they don't go fully into the Dalton part of the original where he lays out his rules and talks about being cool and all these other things and
being nice.
That part's missing, but they kind of establish that visually here that like, okay, yeah, this dude is capable of like breaking every bone in your body, but he's trying to like restrain that and doesn't want to have to be that guy. So they kind of do different ways of saying it without having the scene where he just lays it all out there to the staff. But I thought that was really clever, and I got a good kick out of me when he drives them all to the hospital.
Listening to some Kokomo by the Beach Boys, right, which also was all about the Florida Keys. Another thing I liked is he had his two like understudies, Billy and Reef. And he was almost, he pronouns Dalton. Dalton was almost their Sam Elliott at times, teaching the young bouncers the ways of taking out people. So I like that part.
Yeah, I like the idea of it. I think they could have done a little bit more with it, specifically like showing Billy and Reef like technique. They do a montage where they show them, you know, throwing numerous people out of the bar, but even like intercut that with some like some scenes during the day
of him showing
him, hey, you know, it can be in the montage where they're not talking and you just show him like doing an arm move. I'm doing it now, but nobody can see this. Where he's showing him how to do a hook or how to like do this. And then you show them using that in the evening to get a guy out of the bar. Like,
nice.
You know, to help establish the kind of big brother kind of, especially if, and spoiler alert, if at the end of the movie, he's going to leave anyway, I think it would have helped kind of establish that as him training them. But I do like it. I like that element of it. I like both those characters, but I think they could have just done a little bit more to kind of show that, you know, that tutorship that he was giving them.
Yes. I like that idea. And they had so much great music. I mean, it would just have been another excuse to have more music in there.
Yeah, and they already gave us a montage of them throwing people out. You know, so just splice it. All you had to do was splice it in there in between the scenes of throwing people out.
Maybe elongate that song a bit. No one's gonna complain about a montage in an action movie. If you do, are you an action fan?
That's right.
Are you?
Put the poll up on X.
So
or the new Bulletproof Action Facebook group.
Exactly, and that was quite the topic of conversation when I posted my the link to my review on Friday. To it. So yeah, that was probably our most active post since we've started the Facebook group.
That's good though. I love it. We need more people in there having conversations. It's fun. It was a good idea. A good, nice way to interact with people. Obviously, you know, drive some traffic, but just get a community built up. That's awesome. I encourage everyone to head over to the Facebook group and join it. It's fun.
Absolutely. Or do you just want to be on? I mean, because if you're going to be on Facebook, you'd rather have some fun as opposed to just like crazy posts that family members may share or
If I'm on there, it's mainly in the different kinds of groups I'm a part of. Right. If anything else, that's what I mainly use it for nowadays.
Exactly. And I'm glad you did bring up the rules, because I did want to mention that in the that was like a huge difference, because obviously, you know, Dalton here is just an MMA. He's a tough guy who could handle himself and he could take care of people, but he was not. This was his first bouncing gig. It was not like in the past or in the 89 one where Dalton had been doing that for years and had learned from Wade how to do it and had his set of rules and had his way and was there. I mean, so that was a big difference to me. Was,
yeah, I guess it would have been kind of out of nowhere if he did have set rules.
Right. He was suddenly like, all right, this is what we're going to do. I've never done this either, but this is what I think we should do.
Well, I was on the Greyhound. I came up with these rules here.
And there's a difference too. It's he didn't have his own car, because, well, he had a car, but a little bit of soul searching and then near death experience kind of led him to this job.
That's right. And it wasn't a very nice one. It was no Mercedes.
No, it was. Yeah, definitely not.
Keeping with the comparisons there, I would have also liked maybe, I guess this might have added to the runtime. I don't know how you could have worked it in, but I kind of like the idea that there was some unsavory people working already at, you know, the Double Deuce and
when he in gets the original.
There,
yeah.
Yeah. He kicks them out or fires them because they're skimming off the top. And they're, or the one dude is actually the nephew who's working for the main boss. So I would have liked to maybe have seen, you know, when he gets there, everybody that works in that bar is already like the salt of the earth, you know, top best people. So there wasn't like a scene where he discovers that one of the bartenders is, you know, like skimming off the top, stealing from the till, something like that. And they get him fired. And then that guy actually runs back to the main boss and that helps add to the, you know, whatever. But I don't know. I guess it wasn't a huge miss, but I think it would have helped maybe establish that he was going to clean things up. But again, if he's never done the job before, maybe he,
right, he wouldn't have known what to look for necessarily and have had experience. Yeah. Frankie ran a tight ship. She had a good staff. They seemed to like her. She was a good boss. Again, she was booking talent left and right for the music end of things. She really wanted to make it work. She inherited it from her uncle, so it had some sentimental value to her. But yeah, and she obviously is not forthcoming about why. She's just like, oh, all of a sudden there's a lot of trouble. But she knows exactly why there's this trouble.
Yeah, neither is Ellie. She's not exactly forthcoming about the ties she has to the people there either. So Dalton gets himself in. And fun fact here, almost nobody has a last name on this cast. Like even on the IMDb list I'm looking at, it's just all first names other than Ben. Ben Brandon's the only character with a last name.
And he probably wouldn't have one if we didn't have to establish that he's the son of the bad guy who, you know, I was in prison for drug running, basically. Go figure. In Florida, drug runners?
Never heard of it.
No. So
that's going to be bad, though, when you've got the sheriff's office in your back pocket and you still get busted for drug running. That's, man, he must be just as incompetent.
Well, the sheriff can only do so much. You got the DEA. You got some. There's feds who get involved in sheriff.
Miami Vice, the Vice Department.
Miami Vice, number one new show. Miami. Let me tell you. While we're talking about Miami, Band of the Hand, which I reviewed earlier this month. What a fantastic film that was! I knew of it. It's from Michael Mann. Great film. If you haven't seen it, folks, that's my recommendation.
Where can they find your review?
They can find my review on bulletproofaction.com, and they can find the movie. I believe it's on Tubi.
There you go. Even better.
So, and it was so good that it was, as before it was even over, I was adding it to my cart and buying a physical copy. So,
That is good. That's how you know.
It could disappear from the streaming world.
That's right. Hashtag physical media.
So I'm going to want to probably watch this again sometime, and I want to make sure that I have it. So
I do feel like once movies kind of hit the Tubi cycle, they tend to kind of stay free to access.
I would have said that, but you know what? It popped up on Tubi a while back, and I'm like, oh yeah, I always wanted to check this movie out. And then by the time I went to go get to it, It had disappeared. And then another cheap plug. It was somebody in our Facebook group who posted the poster for Band of the Hand, which put it back in my brain.
Ah.
And I went and searched it again, and there it was back on Tubi. And I'm like, okay,
it's already paying off.
This time I'm not waiting. I'm watching it right now and before it goes away.
Thank you, Facebook group.
Thank you indeed.
Already earning back all the money we put into starting.
Exactly. All right. So I guess just overall, what did you think of the new Roadhouse?
I liked it. I enjoyed it. It was a good, you know, I don't know how it would have felt if I had gone like paid money to sit in theaters and watch it. I know that there was a lot of controversy. The director was extremely upset. I think he even like boycotted the premiere because he did not like that. It was,
he eventually caved.
Okay. I figured it's rare that, you know, you don't get too many chances to go to premieres of your own movies, but and sure, he was upset that it wasn't going to get a theatrical release, that it wasn't going to be on Amazon Prime. But the
weird thing about that is, I think then Gyllenhaal said that was always they knew ahead of time, and they actually got more money up front because there obviously would be no theatrical, like, oh, if this thing does $20 billion, you'll get a piece of the back end. No, they just got more money up front because they knew this was going straight to streaming.
And I think in that realm, thinking of it now, I think it was better that way. Like, if we're comparing it to a lot of the other stuff that comes out on Netflix or straight to Prime and those kind of movies, in that realm, I think it was really good. I think it was solid. The cast was good. I think Jake Gyllenhaal was awesome. And I think he has a pretty good grasp on the character. He's obviously, he can play both the threat and also the down-to-earth, cool guy, you know, that you don't want to mess with and push over the edge. So that's hard to find, someone that can do that dual role. That, of course, Patrick Swayze being one of the others. So I thought it was really well done. Perfect in that kind of straight to streaming release. Getting to my biggest issue, I guess, narratively, is I don't feel like Jake Gyllenhaal's character, Dalton, gets a true kind of resolution of what his issue is. So his problem being that, you know, he is having nightmares about this killing this. They say he was his friend, that he was in this MMA match. We won't see that, but they say that he was friends with him. And obviously that's bothering him. It's causing him to wake up in the middle of the night. He's run from it. He's on the, you know, running from his problems, not dealing with it. And similar to Dalton, the original, he gets that catharsis. You know, he has the Sam Elliott character to tell him to get over it, to work through it, you know, to move forward. And by the end of the movie, you feel like he's found that peace and he's, you know, moved on. We don't really get that in this movie. Like, he just kind of deals with this problem, never shares any of his emotions. He doesn't have a moment with Ellie where he like breaks down and talks about, you know, how he feels about killing his best friend. Nobody helps him get through it. He just beats up a bunch of people, hops on a Greyhound and leaves. And I don't know if there's plans to do a sequel or something, but in this confined movie, like, his character does not really have a satisfying conclusion to whatever shit he's going through in his life. And it felt like it needed to have that, like, just, and it would, again, wouldn't have been hard to have him have a conversation and finally break down to any of the four people that he's developed a relationship with in this movie. It could have been Ellie. It could have been Frankie. It could have been Charlie, whoever, just have him confess to somebody and get this load off his chest. And it never happens.
Yeah, I mean, there are countless, especially in the 90s when all these like underground fighting movies and, you know, how many of them started off with, I was a professional fighter and I killed my opponent and now I stopped fighting, but now I'm forced to fight again. And all of those, I mean, cheap ass direct to video, we're pumping 10 of these out a year. Those had more resolution than this big time movie. That part definitely was probably the worst part for Gyllenhaal. But
it
for me,
good job. And I'd be interested if they shot things that got cut. Cause like it just seemed like really abrupt.
There was a chunk missing there out of his story.
It makes me upset for the character. Cause I feel like the character, that he played it good enough that he deserved to get that satisfying ending, and he didn't get it. So I'm not mad at Dalton's character. I'm mad at the movie for not giving him, I think, what right. he deserved.
So that was definitely a negative. But to me, as I said earlier, the biggest negative for me and what kind of had me disappointed in the whole movie was the bad guys. Their plan was stupid. They were stupid. The one bad guy who was effective was maybe too effective, but like he was against the bad guys. He was against everybody. He was like,
right, he was just loose cannon, wild card chaos.
Right. He was not the one causing any of the real problems to the actual movie. He was just a problem in general to be around. So yeah, that's why I was it just felt disappointment when it was over. It was just like, oh, it was trailer magic, because I was all in on that trailer. And then I was like, oh, come on now. I was definitely not one of like, oh, why are they making a remake? I hate remakes. And no, I came in very open-minded. I was enjoying it as it started, but the further we got along with those stupid bad guys, I was like, I'm done with this. Did not care for it. And I definitely was glad it was streaming, because if I went to the theater, if I paid money, obviously I'm paying for Prime, but to go movie to movie, I'm like, how much sense is that? If I paid $15 or whatever to go see this in the theater, I'd probably been pissed. I would have probably been like, why? Well, you're right, people. They should never remake anything ever again. I would have been.
Which is an interesting dynamic in general that we could probably discuss at some point, is the way that your standards are lowered when it's available to you on a service you already have. Like, you'll see people on Facebook and they're sharing like this trash Netflix action movie. And they're like, holy crap, this movie was insane. You got to watch it. And I'm like, was it really? Or is it because it was free and you're like justifying your Netflix purchase and you were able to watch it in the comfort of your home? You can pause it to go change the laundry and you were like, okay, that was good. You know? And so I think that's an important distinction to make, is if you had to go pay $15 to go sit, take 3 hours out of driving time, trailer time, everything out of your day to go sit and watch this movie in a theater, would you have felt the same way? And yeah, like I said, I don't think I would have either.
Yeah. So there you go.
I guess it's part of not having the Sam Elliott character, but like when that character is killed, that is like the turning point of the movie. That is the ignition. Like, that movie is distinctly split up into a first act, the introduction of Sam Elliott's character, and the death of Sam Elliott's character is like literally the bookmarks the move from act one to act two to act three. And you don't get that. And looking at it, like, who would they have killed off that really would have affected him other than Ellie or Charlie, maybe? If you kill Frankie, I don't know if he would have been as upset. Maybe Billy would have been a good one. Either if like he
right, really especially if we got more of that interaction, as you mentioned earlier, where he was and then, really like, working Billy with these guys.
Killed.
Yeah,
but like, there's nothing for him. For him,
the better kill would have been Reef, because he recruited Reef. He's like, hey, I saw you get involved the other night. You should just do that. Because Reef wasn't working there. He was just there. Right. And he saw Billy having trouble and he jumped in because he's like, I don't like bullies. So that would have been the better character to kill off, because he was there specifically because Dalton asked him to be. He was recruited by
and
Dalton.
And I guess like when he just shows up at the bad guy's place and throat punches and kills that dude, like it felt really abrupt. Like, it was a cool moment, but you're like, that came out of nowhere. I mean, I know they set fire to Charlie's place, and I think that's the inciting incident that makes him, but like, you have that in the original too, and he doesn't go really apeshit after they burn down Red's place. It's later, you know, after
they try to blow up Emmett,
right, and they kill his best friend. Like, that's the moment that you're like, all right,
you see him kill the guy who killed Anthony DeLongis's character. Killed, he had the blade, he knew exactly who killed Wade, and he
that
killed
when it's like him. You know,
he saw Jimmy.
You've pushed the good guy too far, and now I have to do something. Like, now everything he does after that point, in your mind as the viewer, is justified. And when he like throat punches the dude and drowns in the pool, it was a cool moment. But part of me is like, dude, man, that's a little harsh, ain't it? I don't know if that was really warranted.
That's what it is. And again, it all goes back to these bad guys not being properly built up and not being effective at what they're supposed to be doing. Bad guys make an action movie 100% of the time. So there you have it.
Hot take bullet point of the week.
That's all I could say. Action movie. They make an action movie. And otherwise, he's just like,
wait, well, there's plenty of movies with subpar heroes that have really good villains, and that still makes
right. It brings.
You could argue a top actor with a bad villain is a worse movie than a okay actor with a really bad villain.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, there it is. Our part two of our two-part Roadhouse discussion. First time ever here on the History of the Bulletproof podcast. I've got something to talk about before we wrap things up, Ryan, because we have a special week coming up, and you are actually going to be the one kicking things off.
In a big way.
March the 30th.
Literally in a big way.
It is going to be going bananas week on bulletproofaction.com. Tell us how you're going to kick things off for us, Ryan.
Literally, there's no larger way to kick things off for going bananas week than with Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, kicking off next week, starting an entire week of bananas fun. And I'm excited about it. My son's really like into Godzilla and stuff right now, so he really wants to go see it. We're gonna have a good time, and we're gonna kick this thing off in style.
Godzilla X Kong will kick things off on Saturday, March 30th, and we are gonna wrap things up with Monkey Man. And all in between, we're gonna go apeshit all week long. So check it out, bulletproofaction.com.
Join the Facebook page also and go apeshit with us throughout the week. Share your favorite, you know, monkey themed films. Maybe it's Congo. I don't know. Maybe it's all the Planet of the Apes films. Whatever you got, go there and share it with us.
Maybe it's Lancelot Link's Secret Chimp. I don't know. It could be.
Maybe it's Dunstan Checks In. Maybe it's.
Could be. Maybe it's just you want to talk about Gorilla Monsoon. I'm all for it. I'll talk about it with you. Absolutely all day, every day. So that is
a Harambe tribute.
Bulletproofaction.com. And again, as you mentioned, we're on Facebook at Bulletproof Action, Instagram at Bulletproof Action, Threads at Bulletproof Action, and X at Bulletproof Pod. I'm excited. I love when we have a theme week.
It's always
I don't know if anybody
else. Sam Elliott when he came into that movie and just injected life into
everything. Yeah, this is just gonna take us to the top. And you know what else I like? It's everybody on the staff is involved in one way or another. So that always warms my heart as well. Next time here on the podcast, we'll be back on. We're gonna take a break during Going Bananas Week, but we will be back on Wednesday, April the 10th. Celebrating the birthday of one Steven Seagal with a Seagal classic, Hard to Kill, will be the next episode here of the Bulletproof Podcast. What else?
Is he Mount Rushmore of 80s action stars?
Oh, bite your fucking tongue. What are you even saying? No, I would not put him, even if he was. What he's become would have taken him off of it.
I feel like I needed to like say, you know, just
no. He would not have been. If you're talking the 80s,
you got Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Van Damme. Absolutely,
100. I would say Van Damme.
Who's your fourth?
Chuck Norris.
That's good. Yeah.
Or Bronson could go in there too.
For 80s.
Death Wish 3 was most of the Death Wishes were in the 80s, sir.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I would put some of the like that in there. Even freaking Bruce Willis would be a way ahead of Steven Seagal. Die Hard.
Okay, the Mel Gibson. Cheesy action movie. cheesy action movie about Rushmore.
Mel Gibson, I would put in there before I put, I mean, there's plenty of people. Freaking Kurt Russell would be up on there before that. Steven Seagal.
I would say, just knowing you as long as I've known you, Seagal's never been one that you've gone to too often. So
he's somebody I didn't mind. And it's a lot of it was because I was such a big Van Damme fan, like from the jump. Like Van Damme was like, he was the most awesome person. And then Seagal would shit talk him. And I'm like, you know,
he's like the WCW of your action movie star.
Yeah. Or maybe, yeah, a bit. Maybe even actually more AEW, where they just shit talk for no reason. It's like, okay, just do your own thing.
Careful.
Show me. What? Careful for what? Tony Khan going to come after me on X?
No, please, his minions will. My dad might.
Your dad.
AEW for life, he needs He told me he thinks Ospreay is like the most charismatic person since The Rock. That's a quote from him this morning that he told me.
You might need to check him into a home. I mean, he's a great wrestler. I'm not going to deny that, but come on, bruv. No. No.
I agree. I really like him, but yeah, I looked at him like, you're serious. Since The Rock.
All right. You know, and maybe he is. And if that's the case, then everything over there should be turning around. They should be making tons of money and be getting big deals and not having to. There'll be people who actually attend their shows. I hope it is. I hope Will is the turnaround and they get real hot too. And everybody's great. And the business is thriving, but until it happens, I'm not going to buy it. I'm just not. All right. Well, I'm glad we kind of got into the wrestling because I did want to say this, WrestleMania is right around the corner and I will be, as I usually am for the big four pay-per-views or premium live events as they are now, on the sports book with Nick and Gio, giving my WrestleMania predictions. I'll tell you what, I am more popular on the sports book with Nick and Gio than I will ever be on my own show. You know that?
Yeah. I'm happy that a whole other realm of listeners are able to enjoy your abilities and your skills.
They love when I come on there because I make them money. I make these gambling degenerates money with my predictions. So I will be doing that. I believe that should drop April 4th,
8th, or 4th. It's got to be before Mania.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. My predictions were 100%. We did it on Monday. No. It will be before me. So we'll be recording, I believe, on the 3rd. So it'll either be that night or the very next day.
Easily one of my top weekends of the entire year. Like
it's Wrestling Fan Christmas. Yeah. It is Wrestling Fan Christmas. Looking forward to that. I'm also going to be a guest on another podcast. I don't know when that's going to drop, but I will be doing that. I'll be busy next week. So
good. I'm glad.
That's another reason we probably won't be
like the diamond in the rough of the podcasting movie criticism.
I don't know about that.
Common wrestling commentary world, and more people should be aware of your talents.
Well, I appreciate your kind words, even if I don't believe them. All right. Thank you, Ryan Campbell, though, for joining me as you have. And we'll bring you back. I've got to find another movie that you've never seen, which actually shouldn't be too hard. It's just whether it's available or not, and we'll talk.
I actively don't watch movies just so you can just recommend them to me as a content form.
Exactly. So we'll do something, and maybe throw back again to the 80s and get you something you've never seen before and something that I've been wanting to revisit. That's usually a good excuse. Like, okay, yep, Ryan's never seen it. I have been needing an excuse to watch it again. Probably don't even need it, but we'll use that, and we'll be back. So any last words you have before we wrap this one up?
No, just going to be busy finishing up, or not even finishing up. We're halfway through the Bad Batch. Going to be busy coming up end of May, June. We've got some, the blockbuster movie start. June's going to be really busy with Acolyte for Star Wars fans, and House of the Dragon season
House
2.
Of the Dragon. Starting up. Yeah. Yep.
I put out a X-Men 97 post this past week. So
you did a little bonus.
You should be watching for 97. The first two episodes premiered this past week. So check that out. And trying to be busy. Write stuff all day.
I love it. All right, folks. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, stay tuned for more of the Bulletproof Podcast. We'll be right back.
listening to the Geekscape Network.